I think it was in early 43 that we had the invasion of North Africa in World War II. The landing points were from Casablanca northward in French Morocco. Had beautiful beaches there. As the war progressed, more and more shipping was sent into the Mediterranean. Both Oran, O-R-A-N, and Algiers in Algeria. The submarines were having a great time interfering with our movement of our convoys. The Navy came up with a device that they thought would be very helpful. They call it the Mad Cat. MAD stood for Magnetic Anomaly Detector. It was like a big stinger sticking out of the tails of the PBYs, and with an operator inside manipulating the values that they were receiving. At first, the Mad Cat, and of course the cat in this case means Catalina. That was the nickname for the PBYs. Charlie Hutchins was executive officer of the squadron when it was first sent to Iceland and other waters where our convoys would come up around. And they did not have any luck with the Mad Cats over the wide ocean. And the Navy was about to dismantle this thing as a failure when Hutchins said they weren't using it properly. It should be used in confined waters of some regulated depth. So he coaxed the Navy to give him a try, and he picked out Gibraltar as an appropriate place because that's where the problem was. He was based at Leoti, but his planes did this operation in the Straits of Gibraltar. They put up what they call a fence, just like any ordinary fence, but what was really a racetrack pattern that the planes flew from Spanish Morocco to Gibraltar, spanning the entire Straits. And so they use that racetrack pattern. The Navy had some scientists compute what it would take, how many planes it would take to put up a fence, this racetrack pattern, with how many planes, so that if a submarine slipped through one of these lines, it would be intercepted in the other. So normally two, sometimes three planes would fly that pattern. The limitations of the Mad Gear were that some 300 feet, which meant that if the submarine was down at 200 feet, the aircraft could not exceed 100 feet above the water. Now they're making turns day and night at 100 feet. So Hutchins was operating. At this point, we don't know what success he was really having. However, in submarine, anti-submarine warfare, while you'd like to make a kill and sink a submarine, there's a great value to just keeping him down and unable to do any harm until your convoys go by. So in that sense, I think he was doing some good. Now, the point of our story is that Hutchins, who was a very sober-minded, very sober-faced young officer, very sincere in all he did, never smiled, but very sober and sincere. One morning, he said in the Commodore's conference, at such and such an hour, tomorrow afternoon, or whatever it was, he would sink a submarine. which is quite ludicrous under the circumstances. And all the commanding officers, including myself, laughed at him. Well, sure enough, the next day or whenever it was, within reasonable time of that he represented, he got a submarine. Now everybody want to know how he did it. This is how it was done. As he explained to us later. First of all, Hudgens had gotten a hold of an old British map going back to the 1850s, in which it showed the ocean depths in all these places. And he picked up a seamount, which is like a submerged volcano, not active in this case, which if you stood on the seamount, you could look right through the Strait of Gibraltar. On the previous day, one of my pilots had spotted a German submarine coming down southward from out off the coast of Portugal. We ran anti-submarine patrols there. If we can keep them down, we've done a lot of good. Well, we want those sound noise to get through, you see. So the submarine was reported by one of my pilots. Of course, it became a matter of record and in operations. And after Hutchins studied this, he says, I'm going to get a sub tomorrow afternoon. Now, what they were doing, the submarines were coming down, coasting down from Germany or from the north, coming out of the North Sea, coasting down past Portugal, Spain. Everything was very well timed. But this submarine commander must have been a little bit careless. He shouldn't have been showing his periscope or whatever so early. That's why he was sighted. He later on submerged, obviously, and that's the one they got. Now, the German submarines had figured out, and also another thing, on this English chart, they showed the currents in the area, in the ocean for that matter, flowing in in opposite directions in the isthmus or in the Straits of Gibraltar. Now the Straits of Gibraltar are quite deep, the water is quite deep. You have what they call a thermocline. Thermocline is a point at which temperature makes a radical change. Now, with two currents flowing, one in and one out of the Mediterranean, you've got the warm water of the Mediterranean flowing out and the cold water of the Atlantic Ocean flowing in. And this thermocline was down around, let's say, a couple of hundred feet, somewhere in there. Now then, the next day, Hutchins got the thing. The Germans didn't know what hit them. Now, what they used in the Mad Cat, I tell you, they had a big magnetic coil on the back. But if they're to be successful in bombing at that moment that they've made a potential contact, you've got to not drop the bombs, you've got to shoot them backwards. Because a bomb before dropping is traveling at the speed of the plane, but your contact is vertical. So they were manned with retro bombs. So that the moment of contact, the operator could release the bombs. That is, the detector operator could release the bombs. But the bombs at that point would go backwards and negate the forward progress. Before doing that, of course, they make a number of passes, drop floodlights, call in the auxiliary forces. They're going back and forth. You had a lot of service forces, but they weren't doing any good under the circumstances. So that was the the number of his squad, and these were PBYs he was using, we were using. And the number of his squadron was either VP-62 or 63, I'm not sure which. And that's pretty much the story of the Mad Cats, unless you have some questions.
How did he ultimately find that one at that time?
Say again?
How did he ultimately find that sub at that time?
All right. That sub is detected coming southward from Portugal. There's a certain distance from there to the Straits of Gibraltar. Big question is, how are they getting through without being detected? So he studied the ocean bottom, and it showed this mount, this ocean mount, sea mount as we've called it, just so situated that if you stood on it, you could look right straight to the Straits of Gibraltar. So he deduced that that was part of the equation of their getting through. Now, what they normally do in selecting their time for passage, and I don't know the full detail of the hours, this and that, but the methodology was, when it came to the time to submit themselves to the inflowing current, they would always come up and take a look to make sure they were lined with the open. Then they would immediately dive. But it was after they had dived that Hutchins picked them up. And then, of course, we're in the Mediterranean. They're free and open, and they can keep on going. Because we were not patrolling the Mediterranean, we were patrolling the Straits of Gibraltar.
So they just floated in.
Pardon?
They just floated in.
Oh, yes. They get themselves down on the hot water level, or the warm water level. They got the submarine aimed by their compass. And they just get down in there, and just like in a rainfall, the gutters are flowing in one direction, they just flow in without their engines running. And they time themselves, and they figure they should be up by now. We later held exercises with an Italian submarine who emulated this. And I detected the Italian submarine when he came up to take a look. But that was a controlled exercise because we knew he was there. And what we do is make the setup, he'd come in, we'd look for him. But we emulated what was being done after this sinking of a sub by Charlie Hutchins. In addition, Charlie was a great horseshoe player.